future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Welcome in to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I am Joe George alongside Andrew Carlson. As usual, we have returned to our normal duo. Andrew was supposed to be on the Sunday show last week.
Had a little incident.
He died. Not really.
Food poisoning is not fun, Joe.
No, it's not. Food poisoning is the worst. Top worst things that can happen to you, food poisoning. We were just talking about how my debit card got hacked the other day, and now I'm just, like, waiting for money. Those are probably two of the top, like, worst things that can happen to you without being, like, I mean, I guess food poisoning is, like, physically injured, but not, like, a broken bone.
Like, short-term irritations.
Yeah.
Those are among the top of the list.
Absolutely. So you guys can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Carlson Radio. Josh, our producer, on Twitter at IMJ Chevy. We're on twitch.tv/ESPN975, 713-780-3776. The phone line, the text line, Jose Altuve.
Back, baby.
He's back. Batting leadoff.
Swinging at first pitches.
Swinging at first pitches. Lower batting average than Jose Abreu. That won't last long. Probably be changed by the end of the weekend.
Probably have a higher slugging percentage than Jose Abreu by the end of the weekend.
He might have more home runs than Jose Abreu by the end of the weekend. Your Astros are on a 5-game winning streak now, just 2 games back of the Rangers. I'm not really a standings watch guy, but Paul Gallant made a prediction earlier this month, like probably like a week and a half ago, that the Astros would be in first place by the end of the month. And we talked about it in the Killer Bees. And I was like, you know, I said no. I said, you know, with all the injuries at the time, we didn't know how close Altuve really was. I think it was right when he started his rehab assignment for Sugarland when we talked about this. But now, like, when you look at their schedule, it is just this 5-game win streak should easily extend to 7. I know it's baseball, so there's a chance it won't. But they should sweep the A's in their terrible pitching this weekend. Like, the Astros, I think Paul might be right. Like, they might be back in first place in the next 11 days.
It's not dependent on what the Astros do, because I think the Astros are going to not win out for the month of May, but they're probably going to come pretty close to it. The A in Oakland A's stands for single A. They are a single A baseball team. And you mentioned it. You look at the ERAs for basically whoever they throw out on the mound, and I feel bad for anybody who takes the time to watch that team ever. Like, it is so, so pathetic how terrible they are. And the Astros feasted last night. They should continue to feast for the rest of the series. And you look at the Rangers schedule to see how they could potentially catch them. The Rangers finish up a series with the Rockies this weekend. They play the Pirates and then the Orioles, which historically, over the last decade or so, not the toughest matchups. This year, a little bit different. Both the Pirates and Orioles are decent teams. They finish up the month with the Tigers. So there's a decent shot, I think, that the Astros can pick up 2 games by the time we get to the end of May.
Yeah, they're playing really good baseball right now. When you talk about everything the Astros are dealing with, you know, with injuries to the rotation, you know, Altuve just returning, Michael Brantley, who knows, honestly, like where we're at with him. It feels like to me like it could be he could be back in a month and he may never play again.
I don't expect him to play for the Astros this season. I'm going to be honest with you. I do not expect him to play. I think it would be a bonus or a plus at this point if Michael Brantley puts on an Astros uniform again.
I agree. I think that this Michael Brantley stuff, it's the fact that he was ramping up so quickly and he was playing so well and he was hitting the ball, he was driving the ball, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's over. Like, we're back to square one. It's rest. It's let the inflammation die down. And, like, they're not going to tell us if it's a full setback. And I think that's because Michael Brantley himself is hoping that there's a chance he will be fine and be able to come back some point this season and contribute. Like, he doesn't want his career to be over last year, and the last thing he's known for is a World Series speech. So, like, it's just Michael Brantley, like, it sucks, honestly, because, like, it felt like he was going to be an important part of this team again this year, but I don't think we're there anymore. But the positive of what right now is that this team is just, it's overcome pretty much every obstacle you can ask for. Just in the last week, you've had Fromber's worst outing of the season. Your bullpen comes in, dominates. JP France gets shelled. Your bullpen dominates. You get the comeback win, the walk-off against the Cubs. And now you're beating up on the A's. Jordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker are just rolling constantly. Jose Abreu got on base three times last night. Bregman's driving the ball and really looks like he's turning his corner all of a sudden. Like, how the season started to where we are today, it just shows why they're such a great baseball team, because they feel different.
You look at these first 40-odd games, and it's almost been the Murphy's Law of Astros. Like, what can go wrong, in a lot of cases, has gone wrong for the Astros. Outside of Kyle Tucker and Jordan Alvarez, who, knock on wood, have been healthy thus far this season and have looked awesome for the majority of these first 40 games. Outside of that, basically everything that could go wrong for the Astros this season has in some form or fashion gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all of that, they're still on over 90 win pace. And that just bodes so, so well for the remainder of the season and anything past that and into the postseason.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And look, the best thing about the Astros is that, like, they constantly are just, and I've used this before, it's like they are like the definition of first world problems. Like, it always is. It's like you go into a season, in theory, everyone's healthy. Last year, you have seven starters and you have Hunter Brown coming. Like, how do you make it work? They find a way to make it work. This year, you have all these injuries and everything that's gone wrong, but it becomes first world problems again, because it's like, where the hell do you play Mauricio Dubon, who's hitting 300? Chaz McCormick and Jake Myers have both figured out, both deserve to be playing on a consistent basis in this lineup. And I want to go there with Dubon right away. Out of the lineup again today. You know, David Hensley gets sent down yesterday. I think that is a sign that we're not going to see as much Dubon as we hoped. Because you can't really DH Dubon if he's your only infielder on your roster.
Yeah.
Like, if Altuve were to have a little ding and have to leave a game, Dubon has to go play second base. You lose your DH. I mean, you're throwing out pitchers again. It's just like you can't do that. So, like, honestly, I don't get it. I'm not going to complain about the last guy on the roster being sent down. But you have three catchers. You don't play either two of them.
Yeah, Cesar Salazar. Yeah, Cesar Salazar basically never sees the field.
Yeah.
And yet we're sending down someone who, I understand that Hensley has not performed anywhere near expectations for the start of the season. Like, people were saying at the start of the year, oh yeah, he's going to be the everyday utility guy over Mauricio Dubon. And obviously, that did not end up being the case. Mauricio Dubon's been fantastic to start the season. But even though Hensley's been below expectations, he still has more usefulness on this roster than Cesar Salazar. I mean, I don't understand what role Cesar Salazar is supposed to be playing at this point. Is he, like, going out there to catch once every 2 weeks and, like, collect a paycheck? Like, what is he doing on this roster?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And that's where, like, I was hoping, you know, we would see Dubon and Dusty get creative with him. You know, can he, you know, we saw him play center field last year. Can you put him in left field? Do you feel better with him in center and then Chaz in left? Like, there's a bunch of different things you can do with Dubon. So, like, I would like to see him still play three, four, honestly, five times a week. Give Peña a day off, Altuve, Bregman. You know, let these guys rest and work through it. And so, like, that's really where my biggest question at this point is just, like, where does Dubon fit into all this? Because the rest of its stuff is going to work out.
It should be at first base. He's been taking a couple reps there. But obviously,
I think that's coming.
Yeah, Dusty's fascination with Jose Abreu probably isn't going to end anytime soon. I hope it does at some point in the relatively near-term future. But at some point, Mauricio Dubon is going to have to be in the lineup over Jose Abreu, because what Jose Abreu, last night notwithstanding, he's been a complete and total zero basically every time he has stepped into the batter's box as part of the Astros lineup. Mauricio Dubon has been arguably their most important player outside of Jordan Alvarez and Kyle Tucker to start the season from an offensive perspective. And look, I don't know how much longer you can throw a zero out there in the lineup when you've got somebody who is as impactful as Mauricio Dubon has been for these first 40-odd games.
Yeah, I get a lot of that. Honestly, this might be like very – I can't remember the players' names. I'm terrible with names of teams I don't really follow. But you go back to Moneyball, like the movie. And the one manager keeps throwing out a starting pitcher every single day, and like he's not putting Chris Pratt's character out there at first base, and he's finally just like, you got to play him. The manager says no, so then Billy Bean, he cuts the other guy. Like, I don't know if we're headed down like that severe of a path this season, But I wonder what Dana Brown like is really viewing of the Jose Abreu sign. Because Rafael Montero, his last three games, his last three appearances, he's given up no runs. He looks like he's quickly turning the corner. Like Michael Brantley, I think maybe it's just maybe some bad luck. Like, I'm not going to crush Jeff Bagwell too much for it. I think it's mostly that he spoke out of turn and he should not have told people that he was going to be ready for opening day when Jeff Bagwell had actually no knowledge of that. I think he literally just was out of pocket. Yeah. When
and
he said that.
And I don't have any issue with them bringing back Michael Brantley. It's more the cost that they brought him back at. Like, who are you bidding against to bring back a Michael Brantley who had not swung a bat for like 4 or 5 months? You know, no one was sitting there saying, we have to sign Michael Brantley for $14 million right now.
I know.
Otherwise, like, the Astros gave him, what, 12 that could escalate to $16 million, I believe was the contract. So you were bidding against yourselves for no good reason there. And you could have easily waited until we got further into spring to the point where you could see, hey, is Michael Brantley trending in the right direction? And you didn't do that. So that's my only issue with the handling of that situation. I don't take any umbrage in them actually bringing him back. It's just the way they did it and the cost they brought him back at.
Yeah, look, the Astros, it's funny because sometimes it feels like it's hard to not just always be positive when you're on a 5-game win streak. But just there are things that are going on right now that we have questions about. And, you know, going back to Jose Abreu here, you know, when Altuve returned, you know, last night, like, they had won 4 straight games. And I think they had been 5-1 since they put Kyle Tucker in the 4-hole behind Yordan Alvarez.
It was working.
It was working great. Like, you were efficient. You were scoring a ton of runs. Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez were just dominating everyone. The lefty-lefty thing is not a thing for those two guys. So, like, when I saw the lineup yesterday, I was shocked. I was surprised to see Jose Abreu in between. And then to see it again today. Now, Dusty's old school, you know, a hit, you know, got on base 3 times for Abreu last night. Like, okay. I get it. I guess that's Dusty's mentality. I don't agree with it. But here we are again. And it's like, you are statistically lessening the amount of at-bats that Kyle Tucker will get by having him 5th in the order. He will get less at-bats than he would at 4. Like, it's just math.
I really thought that we had gotten past the point of I thought we had finally crossed that bridge and we, you know, had gotten that far along in our journey with Dusty that we weren't going to have to deal with that issue again. And yet here we are. It seems like it's literally, unless he's given no other option, he is going to alternate right, left, and considering the fact that the splits will say Yordan Alvarez is literally hitting left-handed pitching better than he's hitting right-handed pitching this year. And Kyle Tucker clearly has no issue hitting lefties. Just hit a walk-off a couple of days ago off a lefty and has, throughout his career, not had, like, significant difference in his splits between righties and lefties. Like, it just makes zero sense. And it's Dusty being Dusty. And we're going to have to live with it.
We absolutely are. He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You guys are welcome in. Roger, we see you. 713-780-3776. Is your way into the show on the HRMP listener and text line. How do you feel about the Astros right now, and what are your expectations for Jose Altuve as he returns to the lineup? We talk about that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock. Got a couple comments here on the Twitch line. Honestly, I didn't enjoy watching the game as much last night with Dubon out. I couldn't help but think of Dubon when Altuve stranded a runner on third with less than 2 out and Altuve's defensive miscues. Altuve's getting some slander, guys.
It's
out there, though. There are people that are officially Team Mauricio Dubon. I can't believe that.
And there was nobody on Team Mauricio Dubon a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Well, Altuve is going to be okay. Mauricio Dubon has just temporarily won your heart over. He's the fling. And don't worry, he can be a part of your life.
I mean, I know we got one of these calls on the Killer Bees this week was Bench Pena for Dubon. And I'm like, what are we? Like, he just won the World Series MVP.
It's a Gold Glove shortstop. It's kind of important that you field the position pretty
guys,
well.
Like, we all like Mauricio Dubon, but, like, what are we doing here? This is, like, my theory about, like, Rockets fans, that, like, they just, like, they fall in love with the most random players, like, people loved, who's the foreign guy? Starts with an M.
Monty Unis?
Yes.
Donatas Monty Unis?
People loved him, and they were like, play Monty Unis more. I'm like, why? He's not good at basketball.
A little Kostas Papanikolaou?
Yeah, but, like, people just, like, people in the city, they love bad players. Mauricio Dubon's not a bad player, but they just love the role guy, like, for some reason. We got text here, too. Brantley is elite contact bat. You can take that risk if he's expected to be back. Bad luck happens, but Brantley is worth the risk with the reward so high. I do get that theory. It just didn't work out.
Yeah, I look, I'm not saying it's not worth bringing him back, and I will.
It's just the money.
It's just the money and the way you went about it. Like, you were bidding against nobody else in the major leagues, and yet you still gave him the money that you did at the time that you did. Like, you could have easily waited further into spring to see any sort of recovery or what sort of trajectory Michael Brantley was going to be on, and you did not do any of that. Instead, you handed him a $12 million, potentially $16 million contract in, like, what, January, December?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have waited a couple more months easily to see him actually swing a baseball bat and see, hey, where could Michael Brantley be in a few months? And you didn't do that.
And in terms of, you know, Jose Abreu, quick here before we go out to the phones, just something to keep an eye on. Before the game today, Brian McTaggart tweeting this, that Yonier Diaz and Mauricio Dubon getting some extensive defensive work at first base. You know, Brantley was getting reps at first in Sugarland. Now you've got Diaz, Dubon getting reps at first now before games, back-to-back days for Dubon. You know, I wonder if they're getting ready for the pivot. If they're getting ready for, like, you know, Abreu not in the lineup like 6 days a week and really seeing. I mean, I would like to see Yonier Diaz more and just in general. Maldi's catching again today. You have three catchers on the roster and one plays. Like, it's just, it goes back to the Hensley thing. It's just, it's bizarre.
That's the one thing that could potentially make sense with sending Hensley down is if you're going to start using Yonier Diaz at first base, then maybe, okay, you've got a second option over there where you maybe you have used Hensley. So that's the one scenario where it's like, okay, but it's not even in the immediate term future. So even then, I'm maybe giving them excuses when they don't deserve it.
Yeah, for sure. Let's get you guys in here. 713-780-3776, the HRMP. Listen on. Let's go out to Roger. Roger, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? So I'm just stepping out of the job, and, you know, I'm talking to my wife, and she's like, You know, we're talking about, you know, what's going to happen later on in the day. Got to go get the kids and graduation party and whatnot. Because, you know, they benched Dubon again. I go, what? Like, yeah, they benched Dubon again. What the heck are you talking about? So I looked at it. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, this is like borderline gross negligence of management here, man. This guy is like, why are you not figuring out a way to put him in the lineup? It's not that hard. DH the guy or put him in the outfield. I mean, Jokes is okay, but he's more of a pitch hit role now. I mean, you got to understand that we won a lot of games, and I'm not trying to bash Dusty, World Series champion, all that. But sometimes last year they won despite all those crazy lineups because the pitching was so freaking amazing. But I really have to wonder, man, what's going on in his head? He put Abreu back in the four hole. Is that a Altuve influence thing? Because I know they're buddies. I'm not sure, but it's just crazy how he's just handling the lineup now. It's just like, and also, you know, Altuve, he's like Bregman. It's going to take a while for him to get back into his old self. So that's going to be kind of like an automatic out, more likely than not. And with Maldonado and Abreu, that's just too many holes in the lineup.
Thank you, Roger. Appreciate it. Look, there are holes in the lineup. There's not such thing as too many holes in this lineup because I think when you have the talent you have on this team, like, you can overcome Altuve not starting out great. Yeah, he had one hit in his minor league starts. Jose Altuve, is he going to come out and be gangbusters hitting 400 the first week of the season as he returns? No, but, like, you're not going to – what's your plan? You're going to sit him and play him one every 4 days?
Not going to happen.
While he tries to get a swing? It's, like, it's arguably the best player in franchise history. Like, I know Dubon's is a fun story and a good story. And Roger, I do agree. Like, I would like to see the Astros be more aggressive in trying to find a way to get Mauricio Dubon in the lineup. And I think what that's mostly going to look like is days off for Altuve, Pena, and Bregman. But, like, Altuve gets priority. Like, it's not about now. In the Jose Abreu part, could it be an Altuve influence? I don't know. If Altuve had that much influence, Drew Gilbert would be your starting center fielder, because he said yesterday before the game that Drew Gilbert's ready. So, like, I don't. It's not that either. It's just it's Dusty. Dusty does things differently than most traditional managers, I would say, because he's really traditional.
And he's slow to react. Takes an eon to react to just about anything that's going on. And as far as Mauricio Dubon goes, I think part of him not being in the lineup is a consequence of how well Chaz McCormick and Jake Meyers have played basically this entire season thus far. Yep. Like, initially, we saw Dubon be almost, what, the personal center fielder for JV last year?
Yep.
And he got plenty of reps out in center. We haven't seen him in the outfield really much at all this season. And I think a large part of that is the consequence of just how damn good the Astros have been in center. And that's been a strength of the team when we didn't expect it to be. And frankly, why are you going to rotate either Chaz or Jake out for Mauricio Dubon? I know that Mauricio has been fantastic, but there's going to be other places in the field that we're going to have to find a way to fit him in. I don't know how much left he's played. And frankly, like, when Jordan wants to be out there, like, what are you going to tell Jordan? He's going to be out in the field. So he's going to be the rotational option for if Pena has a day off, if Bregman has a day off, if Altuve has a day off. And they're going to find a way to work him in. But I agree, Roger, that it's very frustrating that first two games Altuve's back, they have not found a way to do it yet.
Yeah, look, and that's where this kind of goes into like a bigger picture conversation about the Astros with where we're at with Mauricio Dubon right now, and more towards like the trade deadline. Like, when you talk about building this team and adding to this team to really just, you know, add to the firepower to go for that second World Series in a row, and you start talking about the lineup, and like, people have brought up, do you trade for a hitter? Well, where? Like, that's the Dubon problem. It's like, where does that player fit? Left field / DH does seem like an opportunity now with Michael Brantley. I think I agree with you, Andrew. Likely not going to play again this season. If he does, like, I don't think he'll be ready by the deadline either, so I can't bank on it. So maybe you have a spot there. You have Martin Maldonado and Yonier Diaz. You're not going to add to the catcher position. You're stuck with Jose Abreu. Like, maybe Diaz and Dubon give some days off, but those three guys are going to be your first baseman, unless Dana Brown goes bold and says, we're going to, you know, eat Jose Abreu's salary right now, and we're going to go acquire a first baseman. I would think there's a very small chance that happens, to be honest.
It was one of Jim Crane's signature moves this offseason, and when the owner is one of the leading forces, him and Jeff Bagwell, obviously, behind a move like that, I feel like it's significantly more difficult for the GM to just say, hey, this signing you made was god-awful, and we need to move off of it right now.
Yeah.
Jim Crane is going to give Jose Abreu probably as much time as he can to try and figure things out to whatever degree he'll end up being able to this season. So I would be stunned if they just trash the Jose Abreu experiment, no matter how bad it is mid-season this year. I think if we find a solution to whatever this Jose Abreu issue / deal is, that's this upcoming offseason. It's not going to be an in-season move. The only thing that's going to happen in-season this year is his playing time has decreased significantly.
Yeah, and look, so that's where I think, you know, it kind of connects these conversations with, you know, how do you play Dubon? You know, it's complicated because, you know, Chaz and Jake, in my opinion, have shown that you could really put both those guys in the lineup every single day at left field and center field. They've played well enough to do that. And Yordan Alvarez could be your primary DH. And yeah, you can have lineups like last night where Jolks is your DH and, you know, Yordan's in left. And like, there's a bunch of different maneuvers you can do within the lineup itself. But for the most part, like, this team, you know, even with the slow start, has exceeded expectations in the outfield. So they're in like a tough, good spot. They're not panicking. They don't need to panic. But they also, like, have this talent that they need to find a way to get in there more frequently. And I think we'll see that. Like, I think we'll see Dubon pretty consistently. But, yeah, it's shocking he's not in the lineup for the first 2 days.
Yeah, like, that's one of those things. You knew that the first day back, Altuve was going to get the start at second base. And I'm curious how they're going to handle his return in general. Because usually how they do it with guys coming back from rehab, 2 days on, day off. I wouldn't be shocked if that's not the case with Altuve. Altuve strikes me as a guy who's going to be coach. I want to be out there every single day. And if that's the case, it's going to mean that Dubon is going to find playing time much harder to come by.
Yep. He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You can find us on Twitter at Carlson Radio, at Joe George Radio. We're going to do a deep dive here later on the Astros about one of their big names, Kyle Tucker, because I got some thoughts on what the franchise needs to do with him. But coming up next, the Texans, they've been bad for three seasons now. Recently, there was a PFF did a list of the top 25 players under 25. To no one's shock, there's literally no Texans on this list. But how disappointed are you that that's the case? What does it mean for the franchise, and who do you expect to see on that list next year? We hit on all that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock on The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pro Football Focus put out a list of the top 25 players under 25 entering the 2023 NFL season. No rookies allowed. And to no one's surprise, there are no Texans on this list. It is where, Andrew, I think the frustration with, you know, the rebuild, the timeline of this team, how bad they've been. Like, you've been this bad for 3 years. You don't have anyone?
Well, that's part of the...
Anyone?
That's part of the issue in where the situation they found themselves in was that they were bereft of draft capital and weren't able to really amass young talent up until this past draft. So all of a sudden, before the Deshaun Watson trade, you know, you were picking second, third round later on in the draft. You had a very, very difficult time amassing any level of actual talent on the roster. So I understand the frustration with no Texans being on the list, because it just speaks to how awful the situation has been here for the past three seasons. But on the bright side, glass half full, I believe that that's going to change over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think if you look at the list, I mean, there's first of all, because it's almost like two different conversations. It's one, it's disappointing that there's no one on the list, but it's also the reality is there's no one deserving to
exactly
be on this list.
Like, you can't go through the Texans roster and say, hey, is there anybody that should be on this list over, let's say, a CeeDee Lamb, a Jalen Waddle, a Jonathan Taylor? Absolutely not.
I mean,
not.
Hell, you just go to the bottom. Like, I think the most overrated player in the NFL is number 25 on this list, Trevon Diggs. Like, that dude has a ton of picks, but he gets burned left and right.
Significantly better player than probably anybody the Texans could theoretically throw out to be on this list. Like, so let's say...
Because Derek Stingley hasn't played.
Derek Stingley hasn't played. Jalen Petrie was maybe your best rookie defensive player last season.
For sure.
And does he deserve to be one of the... I don't think so.
No, he's not there yet. And that's where I think, you know, when you look at the future of the Texans, it's brighter than it's been. Because when you talk about this list, you know, last year going into the season, if we looked at this list and it was the top 25 under 25 going into 2022, you'd say, okay, well, maybe if Derek Stingley has a great first year, he could be on that list going into the following season. You know, Kenyon Green as a guard, I think we all had lower expectations for than Stingley, so I don't think his name would even come up. No one would have talked about Dameon Pierce. No one would have talked about Jalen Petrie. And now when you look at this list, you say, okay, going into 2024, how many players under 25 could be on this list? Now, I'm not going to go through and find out how many of these guys are turning 26 to find out how many of them are leaving the list, because there's some real talent on here.
Mm-hmm.
But Derek Stingley Jr., under D'Amico's defense, in theory, should be much better.
He should. He's top of the mind. He should be the first name that comes to mind when you're saying, who is going to be someone on this Texans roster who significantly improves with the circumstances that they're going to be surrounded by this upcoming season versus where they were last year? And Derek Stingley has to be number one on that list. And look, with D'Amico calling the defense and just the amount of resources that they've spent improving both the secondary and the defensive line through the draft and free agency, if he doesn't take a significant leap this season, that pick at number three is going to look like a massive, massive failure, especially considering, as Jake Asman reminds me all the time, Sauce Gardner went one pick behind him and was first-team All-Pro in his rookie season.
Yeah, it's tough. I think, and the next guy on that list is also very simple. It's Will Anderson. Now, when you look at the current list that Pro Football Focus put out, like I named Trevon Diggs as the one guy I would leave off this list, Because the name that's the most surprising that's not on it from a national perspective is that 9.5 sacks and 3 interceptions didn't get Aiden Hutchinson on this list. So it's like, I don't know, like maybe they just didn't view his season the way I did, but like you're talking about defensive rookie of the year, like a guy that is, or the national, the NFC defensive rookie.
There you go.
I think that's how they do it. But like he's at the top, like he's a great player already coming out of the NFL after his rookie season. I was surprised to not see Aiden Hutchinson on this list. And like, that's where I kind of question, like, what would Will Anderson have to do to make it? Like, would he beat? Is he going to beat 9.5 sacks and 3 picks?
Also, going to have to depend on, well, what the level of competition is going to be for him to get on the list. Like, Aiden Hutchinson, I feel his rookie year was overshadowed by just how amazing Sauce Gardner was.
Yeah.
Someone in the same class being named a first team All Pro. I think that Will Anderson is going to have potentially less competition from his own rookie class than some of what Aiden Hutchinson faced this past, just because of the fact that I believe this to be a weaker draft class. For the 2023 draft versus last year's 2022 draft. So I think there's a chance that Will Anderson, just because of the competition he's up against, might stand out a little bit more than Aiden Hutchinson did in his rookie year. And then on top of that, if you are the center point behind the Texans defense improving the way that we expect their defense to improve and the way that we expect their overall record to improve, if you're like the leading catalyst of that, you're going to get a lot of praise and a lot of hype and a lot of attention.
Yeah, other guys that like you, I think you would hope are in this list. The name we're not going to I'm not going to say. I don't think you are. There is, I would not expect to see C.J. Stroud on this list.
Absolutely not.
This is based off their current list. The fact that Trevor Lawrence won a playoff game last year, played much better, and he's the first quarterback on this list, top 25, under 25, and he comes in at number 18.
It's the only quarterback on the list.
So, like, for the idea that, like, C.J. Stroud is going to, like, crack the top 25 when only Trevor Lawrence is barely even on this version of the list seems like a real stretch. I think Damian Pierce, in theory, could be on it, but there's also only one running back on the list.
He's going to have to be really good, and I think he can be. The offensive line is going to be one of the best units on this football team, if not the best. It's probably going to be a battle between the offensive line and the secondary to see which is the best and most impactful unit across the roster. Mm-hmm. And with that being the case, I fully expect Damian Pierce to have an awesome season this upcoming year. And if he doesn't, I think it's going to be actually be a massive disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, look, they did a good job with, you know, controlling his carries last year, even though it was they were forcing Rex Burkhead down our throats.
But they were being smart. Like, they were conserving Damian Pierce for a time when they were expecting the roster and team to be more competitive or to be on the path to being more competitive. And as much as we all love Damian Pierce last year steamrolling dudes and putting his head down, there's no point in wasting the tread on that tire in a season that was totally lost and pointless.
Yeah, and I think you'll see Devin Singletary get a good amount of reps this year as well. So, you know, I would expect to see at least one Texan on this list next season. And I think there's a good chance it's two. And like, I'm a Derek Stingley Jr. believer because I know there's the injury concerns. And I know you have to like look at big picture, like what he's done since his freshman year of college. But there's one practice film that like is public knowledge that people have seen that I can't get out of my head. And it's when I look at this list, top 25, under 25, I see number 2, Justin Jefferson, number 4, Ja'Marr Chase. And I watch that footage and I watch Derek Stingley Jr. as a freshman dominate those dudes at LSU. And I'm like, if he can just be healthy, yeah, I don't think he can make the Sauce Gardner pick fine. Like, he can be that good. So, like, I would hope Derek Stingley's on this list. And I think there's a good chance Will Anderson will be, too.
If Derek Stingley is not on this list or similar type of lists by the end of next season, he needs to be either really damn close.
Or like, he's going to be on bus
like,
list.
He needs to be on, like, the 26 to 30 range. Like, he either needs to be on the list extremely close, or we're talking about Nick Caserio made a massive, massive blunder at number 3.
And that's where I think, like, when you talk about the long-term future of Nick Caserio, I mean, they hired they brought in someone from the Patriots this week. So kind of showing that he's still, you know, he really is in charge. They're not doing the whole Patriot way thing. He hires someone he has a connection with, normal business practice, right? But when you talk about the future of this team and, like, the future of Nick Caserio's job status, I think by letting him trade all that draft capital, they are showing that they are invested in Nick Caserio. My issue is that if Derek Stanley is not good and Kenyon Green does not develop, then how many more drafts do you want to give Caserio?
Because the results aren't great.
It's a tug of war.
Like, yeah.
It's limited reps, but it's like, so far it's not good.
Yeah, and I think all of it is going to really come down to what do we see from C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson this upcoming season? Because if C.J. Stroud looks like he's just way over his head, and Will Anderson, it's not fair that the pressure is going to be on him to the degree that it will be, but if Will Anderson doesn't look like he's on a at least baby Bosa type path at minimum, someone who you can say with relative confidence is going to get you at least 10 sacks a season, like Cody and the Wheelhouse went through a, you know, what should be the expectations for Will Anderson over his first 3 or 4 years? Cody said he needs to average at least 10 sacks his first 3 seasons in the NFL. That's a lofty standard, but given the what you paid for him, I feel like that's a relatively reasonable expectation. So C.J. Stroud's going to have to show signs early. Will Anderson is going to have to do the exact same thing. And if they don't, I don't know if Nick Caserio will be on the hot seat, but he damn sure should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny. I typed in just quickly on Google Will Anderson sack totals to see what the Vegas number was. And the first article that comes up, best futures to bet now, including the under on Will Anderson Jr.'s sack total at 8.25. Now, the reason is that...
8.25. Oh, I guess you can't get a half sack. Okay.
Yeah. The reason is that just 2 seasons over the past decade have produced multiple rookies with 8.5 or more sacks, and only 9 total first-year players have reached 10. So, like, it is a big number, like, as a rookie, but I expect Will Anderson to get after the quarterback, to be honest. I would probably be willing to bet the over onto that. I would wait to see if it gets down to like 7.5, and then like
you
then,
feel I'd feel a lot more comfortable with it there than
yeah.
At 8.
So like maybe yeah. Like see if it gets bet down a little bit and then go on the 7.5. Like I'm fine with 8.25. Like I might throw a couple bucks on that. We'll see. Let's see what the odds look like. All right, he's Andrew Carlson. He is a born and bred Houston boy. He's been here his whole life. Have you ever been to a hockey arena?
Yes, I went to a couple Arrows games growing up. And I went to...
I didn't know age-wise if the Arrows were, like, really a thing for you.
They were in elementary school, a thing.
Okay.
So, like, I remember them being in the paper, and I remember going to a couple games because, you know, you read a book, you get a free ticket to the game.
Okay.
All those little programs.
Yep. Minor league sports at its finest. Yeah.
Had a couple of those, and I also went to a minor league hockey game in Alaska, I believe.
Okay. So, he's not a total noob to hockey.
Yeah, 3 games, baby.
3 games. There is one of the offshore betting sites has the city of Houston as the betting favorite to land the Phoenix Coyotes. I am going to try to sell Andrew Carlson on hockey and why we need a team in this city. We do that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George and Andrew Carlson here with you till 2 o'clock. I'm about to lose Andrew for the next hour and 13 minutes as the Arsenal game is finally on TV. Have you ever tried this before?
What, broadcasting while a sports game is on television?
Is this going to be like your first time doing a show while a team that you like really, really care about is on TV at the same time?
Well, see, the thing is, thankfully, Joe, to talk to you, I'm forced to look away from the television. Yeah. So it's going to be able to keep my focus on what's important.
So should I try to just, like, keep stoic?
Yeah.
Just, like, to pretend like nothing's happening?
Just imagine that you are not watching anything on the television in front
of
you.
And then normally Arsenal's in red.
And they're in black today.
They're in black today. So don't celebrate if the red team scores.
Yes, do not do that. I would be very unhappy if you do that.
All right, so this week, the city of the Phoenix area, Arizona, there was a proposal put out to help build a $2-plus billion stadium in Phoenix to keep the Coyotes. And so it was put up to a vote for the community, and they got denied. And the response from the executives with the Arizona Coyotes, if anyone caught the press conference, was pretty dejected. Like, it was They thought they were going to win the public funding for their new stadium. If you don't know, they've been playing in an arena that's smaller than the Fertitta Center right now, is where the Phoenix Coyotes are playing, because they don't have a home to play in anymore. And it looks like they're going to be forced to play there again next season. And since then, everything's been coming out of they're likely going to move. There's been talks about Quebec City, Kansas City, and Houston have really been the three cities where it's like, if the Coyotes are going to leave, that's their most likely option. They literally, did you see the Twitter poll they put up and what happened? They put up a Twitter poll of where they should move. And they listed four cities in Arizona, like Scottsdale. And literally within an hour, there was a job posting for their social media person.
Now, I've heard, I do remember seeing the, you know, all the virality that came along with that. I do remember also seeing some responses that said that position's been open for a little while. Okay. It hasn't just been a immediate opening.
I thought this was like the horse and the gun thing that happened with the Rockets social media guy, where it's like that dude got fired. And the Rockets posted the job like within like a 24 hours. Like, so I thought maybe that's what happened here. Someone was got a little too courageous with having the social media login. But I think there is a very reasonable chance that Houston is selected to be the home of the Phoenix Coyotes for a couple different paths. The first one is that I could see them move here temporarily and rent Toyota Center from Tillman Fertitta until they decide where they're going to go next. Just because that relationship, like if you look at Oakland right now with the A's, they're selling tickets to these Astros games coming up in the next couple weeks for like $1, $5 to be like rows behind the dugout. Because no one cares. I've had people have kind of told me what it was like. You know, obviously, I didn't live here at the time. You know, it was very similar to the way when it was announced that the Oilers were leaving for Tennessee, that no one's going to go to the game. Why would you spend money on a team that's going to abandon you?
Right.
And that same thing's going to happen in Phoenix. So I think there's a couple paths to this where, like, the first one is that they come here temporarily. The second one is Tillman or someone buys it. And the third option would be that the owner just moves the team here and they rent Toyota Center from Tillman Fertitta. But I view Houston as, like, those three options of Quebec, Kansas City, and Houston. I think Kansas City and Houston should be your top two options.
Okay. Now, why is that?
Because Quebec's failed. Like, they're talking about Atlanta. Atlanta, this would be their third team. Like,
Do that.
It's like the Oakland Raiders. You keep trying, you keep failing. Like, you don't ever go back to Atlanta. So, like, if you're gonna move the Coyotes, like, you should move them to a city where, like, there's never been an NHL team. You can't compare rate. I know I've seen people who are anti this on Twitter are trying to make the argument of, like, well, look at the history of Arrow season ticket sales and just ticket sales in general. It's different. It's minor league. That'd be like comparing the Sugarland Space Cowboys ticket sales to the Houston Astros. Those are not the same. It's not. It's just not. So, like, I think it can work here. I think it's a great environment. Like, the game is super fast-paced. Josh and I were talking about this during the break. It is a better viewing experience than the NFL because the action never stops.
Okay.
Like, it's just go, 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 go. The fights, like, it's I know it sounds dumb, but when they take those gloves off and they start throwing down, it's a great time. But honestly, it's just the pace of the game. It's an incredibly enjoyable experience. It's also, I like the fact that, like, it's 20 minutes, 20 off, 20 on, 20 off, 20 on. Unless you get a 4 OT game like the other night, like, you're out of there in 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think it would be great here, to be honest.
Do you think that the Houston sports scene would have the room? Because that's my biggest question, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, is as fans in the city of Houston, our attention is already split so many different directions, typically. Would there be a team that has enough pull to become a fourth piece of that pie? Well, I guess fifth if you include the Houston Dynamo for us soccer fans out there.
The problem is that the Coyotes aren't good. If Houston really was going to do this the right way,
they need a Golden Knights type team, at least in my opinion, because Houston, I love the city of Houston, have been here my entire life. I'm a diehard Houston sports fan. There aren't a ton of people like me in the city. You've got a ton of transplants who they're following the teams when they're good. And that's why Minute Maid is packed almost every other night, because the Astros have been the best team in baseball over the last six seasons.
Yeah.
It's not like Toyota Center is, you know, filled up since James Harden left. It was hard to fill up Toyota Center when James Harden was here. We've seen what's gone on with the Texans the past few seasons. I have a couple concerns if the Coyotes aren't a good franchise, which it sounds like they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
That you would be able to sell people on anything other than the novelty for the opening season.
That I think that the novelty, the question is how long does it wear off until it wears off? I think you have like probably, so my view of the city as kind of an outsider in terms of like how I view the fan base is that I think the Coyotes would have a 2-year window to turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that second year has to be like upward trajectory. Like you're pushing towards the playoffs, if not getting knocked out of the first round. Like I don't think you can come here and be a team that's winning 28 out of 82 games like they did last year.
So you threw out,
it's not good enough.
You threw out the potential of the Coyotes being here on a temporary basis,
yeah,
and then potentially relocating somewhere else. Could you see a scenario where they're here for a couple of seasons, it gets on that upward trajectory that you're talking about in that second season, things start going really well, and then they decide to make Houston the permanent home?
Yeah, because I think that's when Tillman like really gets involved.
Okay.
Because like I think if Tillman Fertitta as a businessman probably wants to rent out Toyota Center versus then just have them. Because then someone's paying rent 41 nights a year. And like you can charge, it's why the Arrows had to leave, was because the rent was too high to be able to have sustained success. Like, so Tillman probably is viewing it as like he would rather someone bring the team here, they pay Tillman. But the other thing I've kind of wondered too is like, is there a path to someone else bringing the team down here and they play at Toyota Center temporarily? I wonder like what the reaction would be if they didn't play downtown. Because I went to the Cubs Astros game on Tuesday night, and it was a terrible storm. Yes, we are 7.5 miles from Minute Maid Park right now. It took me 55 minutes to get there.
It's abysmal.
Like, I know, like, you see teams move to the burbs. Like, could you put a stadium in like Sugar Land? Or like, and like people would go
potentially.
Like, I don't know. Like, I wonder like if that helps. Like, you go smaller stadium, not a massive stadium, like bigger than obviously Fertitta Center, but not bigger than Toyota Center, smaller than Toyota Center, and go out to the suburbs a little bit. I think you might have sustained success there. But the biggest thing, to my opinion, is it's going to be winning. Like, they have to win. If they don't win, it's not going to succeed because, look, there are a lot of front runners.
That's what Houston is, man.
I'm
sorry. For better or for worse, that's what Houston and the sports fan in Houston has been about,
yeah,
for as long as I've been alive. Teams are winning. People show up to those games. Outside of the Texans, who had their initial run early on in their franchise history.
Yeah.
As long as a team is winning, fans show up. If they're not, they don't.
And that's where, like, if they could have got one of the expansion teams, I would feel better about it. I will say, like, my opinion before they announced the Seattle Kraken for how good Houston could be with hockey, it is different now in terms of confidence of success. Because, like you saw, Seattle just got knocked out in the second round of the playoffs. The Golden Knights, they're another expansion team. They went to the Stanley Cup. They might go to another one here. Because the way they do the expansion draft is the exact opposite of the NFL. The NFL doesn't care if the Texans are good. They know they will be fine eventually. The NHL said, we're going to fail in these markets if we don't put good products out there. So they lessen the pool of players that you can keep. So that's how the Kraken and the Golden Knights were so successful. And I think Houston would have had a much better chance to have great success with hockey if they got an expansion team versus a relocation. And especially if you've got an ownership group that has shown like they don't want to spend money. Like, it's just like why I don't think the Oakland A's are going to work in Vegas, because I think that ownership group is just terrible.
Right.
So like, if Tillman buys them, I think they can be successful. I think the other thing that helps them, to be honest, is what happened the other night. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But the Rockets are going nowhere fast. And, like, if the Rockets can't get this thing figured out, and you've got a Rockets game on Tuesday, a Houston Coyotes game on Wednesday in 2024, people might be more likely to go to the Coyotes game because the Rockets are going nowhere fast because they can't get a lottery ball to fall their way. So, like, that's where I think there's a chance.
Okay. I can buy that.
I also just... they're so much fun to go to. They're great. It's a great experience. He's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. It's the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.